This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we're ready to talk about something that is real important to most of us. We're going to talk about your money. We're going to talk about...
Why do you look at me when you say my money? My money?
Well...
It is my money?
All right, I'm listening. Because you're right here.
I'm listening.
I'm looking at you.
I'm listening. You have my full attention.
I get your attention. And the your money that we're going to talk about is the state of Arizona revenues. We've talked a lot about the way... We've done several shows on where Arizona spends its money, but there, the other side of that equation is where does it all come from? And to that end, we have probably the foremost expert on that subject here. Dennis Hoffman is an ASU economist, and Arizona state revenues is a particular fixation of his research. And welcome, Dennis.
Great to be here.
And let me start out with just setting a I think a lot of people get confused when we start talking about more money than they make in a week. There's millions, there's billions, there's trillions. When we talk about Arizona state revenues, we don't get into trillions, but we certainly get into billions, and just a back of the envelope calculation so we can put this in some perspective. If the state of Arizona spends $1 billion per capita, if you're an average income person right dead in the middle, that's about $150 of your money. Is that a rough
Fair
back
enough.
Of the envelope?
Fair enough.
Capital. So when we say $1 billion, think $150 expenditure. It's not exactly a house payment, but it's not a candy bar either. Let's start out, if we would, also define some terms. There's something called the general fund, which is only a part of state revenues. What does the general fund mean? Is that just discretionary money?
Well, the general fund, frankly, is where all the action is. So we hear a lot about the legislature. The legislature's job is to allocate general fund revenues that they collect from the citizens of Arizona and the businesses of Arizona, and they spend it on K-12, prisons, access, indigent health care, universities, public safety, those kinds of things.
And that's what I use the phrase discretionary, which to me means those things that are not mandated, that the legislature can spend more, spend less, frankly, spend not anything at all if it chooses to.
Well, the interesting thing about the term discretionary, and it's fascinating that you raise it, I think, there are some expenditures out of the general fund that are formula-driven. There's a law that's been passed. There's a statute that exists that directs the legislature to spend a particular formula-driven amount.
And out of the general fund.
That is correct. And much of K-12 is, quote, protected, unquote, by those discretionary formulas.
In other words, there's a formula that says something like for each
X dollars per student.
Kid.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the legislature appropriates it, but supposedly they have to.
Yes, unless they change the statute, of course. And what you don't have is the similar protections in either the universities or the prison system, which is then arguably, by some arguments anyway, why we saw reductions in universities this year, because they did not have those particular
protections. Of course, in the case of the universities, there is this general but undefined constitutional provision that university tuition shall be as, quote, nearly free as possible.
Yes, instruction at the state's universities should be provided as nearly free as possible. Another provision is that it is the obligation of the legislature to provide for the development and improvement of the state's universities.
Okay, and I think this is where people get confused, because we're dealing with a general fund, and now we're talking about different funds. And apparently there are impenetrable borders between these funds that none can be used in the other pot. Not like I think of my household budget. So if one part of our budget is low, it is made up by another part that is high. So we get to move that money from one to the other. Why is it not the same in Arizona government?
Well, again, the general fund in the general fund, you pretty much have that discretion. The legislature has the ability to change the formulas. I think what you're alluding to are, say, highway user revenue funds, highway taxes that have to go to pay for highways, or certain federal dollars that are passed through to state and local governments that have to go to particular housing or welfare or food programs.
Let's talk big picture. In billions, do all of this in billions, so we're using the same metric. How much money does the state spend in a year, counting all the federal pass-through and everything else?
And you want to include local or just the state?
No, state of Arizona.
Just the state. On the order of $30, $32 billion.
Okay, and how much of that is general fund?
About $9
Okay, so $9 billion. Because when we hear in the paper talking about the state budget, it's always in the realm of $9 billion.
Correct.
Okay? So let's talk about that other 21. How much of that is federal?
About 10.
Okay, so about a third. So there's about $30 billion total. There's
$10 billion
of it comes from the federal government. So, so about a third of the state budget is money that you paid to the federal government that comes back to the state. And what is that mostly out? That's pretty much not general fund. That's pretty much hard allocated to specific purposes.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah, by federal.
What does that go for? Where are the big
welfare
pieces?
Welfare programs, housing programs, education grants, any number of highway programs, federal highway programs.
Building interstates. For
absolutely.
Example, or maintaining interstates.
Absolutely.
Okay, so about 10 is from the feds, 9 is general fund. That leaves 10 or 11. Where does that come from? Is that basically user fees?
You got all sorts of things floating around.
I think one of
here.
The big ones is you pay money when you buy a gallon of gas. That gets hard coded into building roads.
You collect a tuition dollar from a university student that gets plowed right back into their tuition,
and that counts
as a fee, certainly.
Okay, so that's in that $11 billion.
Sure, is
all of that.
Sure.
So 20 of this is pretty much allocated. The state can deal with some fraction of the remaining 9.
Really. We really have to focus on the fact that the general fund is where the action is. The general fund dollars are approximately $9 billion. Trust me, many legislators have explored, trying to tap some of these other dollars, move them into the general fund, but that's just impossible.
All right, now I'm doing the math in my head, and if we're talking about $1 billion equals about $1.50 per...
$150.
That's why I say $1.50. Okay. That's how the cool kids
talk. I just didn't want somebody think it was the cost of a candy bar.
Dennis Hoffman, ASU economist, he is here with us. He's going to explain who is paying that $150 a pop next.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are breaking down the state budget here with Dennis Hoffman, the expert thereof. We've established that the state has about $30 billion in total expenditures, but only 9 of it is something that realistically the legislature can control. And the question I have, so that $9 billion comes from, I assume, a combination of income taxes, sales taxes, and some other kind of fees. Can you roughly, again, with billions, capital B, break that down? Where does most of that money come from?
Most of it comes from individual income taxes. This year, that'll be about $3.7 billion. And sales
taxes. A little under 4 out of 9.
And a little over 4 comes from sales taxes.
So a little bit more from sales taxes than income tax.
A little bit more.
And the state sales. Now, when we pay sales tax, some of that is state, some of that is local. What's the state part of the sales tax?
5 points. Let me back up. 5%. Would be the
5% is
that
the
goes
state.
In the general fund.
You,
that's right.
You make a $100 purchase, you pay $105. Well, you pay a little more than that because some of it goes to local, but $5 on a $100 purchase goes to the state.
Correct.
And the sales tax is more than the income tax.
That is correct.
Okay. So I'm up to about a little under 8 out of 9. So the other sources of income are in the neighborhood of 10 to 15% max.
Correct. And that's corporate income taxes. Insurance premium collections, and then miscellaneous fees and charges.
Insurance premium, like, this is not my house insurance. That goes to the state.
Yeah, I believe it is
Unemployment, believe, insurance,
no,
things like
no,
that?
No, it is on the premiums that you pay on all your insurances. I believe it's 2%, 4%. It's one that I monitor closely, so okay. I apologize for not being upfront with the rate. I'm sure the insurance folks out there in the audience know that rate very very clearly.
Well, you did mention property taxes. Isn't that a part of
that? That does not go to the general fund.
Does not go to the general fund. Where does property taxes go then?
Largely, property taxes are collected at the local level and are provided to support schools and
schools
also,
the big one. Community colleges finances. A smaller one, I believe,
Absolutely.
City finances. So,
right.
So largely the state of Arizona doesn't get your property taxes.
That is correct. Now, that was not always true historically. Mm-hmm. We had a small portion of a statewide property taxes that funded the general fund up until, say, the middle 90s.
Okay. Okay, one of the things that got cut.
We got rid of that, okay. Yes.
So again, just recapping here then, if I want to understand where I think what you're telling me is a little under half of the revenue comes from sales tax, and a little less than that comes from income tax. More sales than income, but those are the two big enchiladas. Then there's 10 or 15% of miscellaneous other stuff.
That's right.
Fair point. Okay, who pays? Who pays? What is our? I mean, that's the big picture. But
we all contribute to the coffers of the general fund through our sales tax transactions, and that's on all taxable sales taxable items. But it is not food. It's not personal services. But it's, many retail purchases that you make. You buy a car. You pay sales tax on it. So consumer durables, most of the consumer purchases that you make, even if you make them online, by the way, you owe those taxes. Many of them go uncollected, of course.
There's not much of a mechanism for collecting
they're
them.
They're not administered. There's not an obligation, but for some of our online sellers are required to administer the collection of the tax.
I noticed
but not
there
all.
Is a line, and I suspect it's not used very much on the state income tax form, where you can, in effect, say, "Well, how much did you buy?" and and just send your money in here, Mike.
Yes, let me tell you how to the penny I am on that line.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, they got rid of that about a year or so ago.
Thank you. Good
because
Lord.
It probably wasn't worth the ink on the paper.
Because of the humor, I think, that you are seeing in it, they did get rid of that.
The largest online seller, I would say, in the state of Arizona is Amazon. So Amazon has their time. They take it from you anyway. There's no way dancing around that one anymore.
Amazon, I believe, does administer the collection.
Yes, I believe the way the law works is they have to do it if they have a physical presence in the state, which means if they have a warehouse or something, which Amazon does,
right?
They have to pay it. Whereas if somebody is completely out of state, then there's essentially no reach of the state against the company.
Correct.
They can say that you as an individual are still obligated to pay it, but there's a almost non-existent collection mechanism for doing it. Fair statement, Dennis?
That's correct.
Okay. Would you explain what is regressive and what explain the terms regressive and progressive taxation?
Okay. Regressivity and progressivity refers to the percent of your income that gets allocated to taxation. So let's think about a sales tax. And there's a few percents floating around. People get confused. A sales tax, say, is 5% of the purchase. But it's argued that lower income people have to spend a higher share of their low incomes on these purchases.
Close to 100%, one would think.
Well, there's a lot of services and there's a lot of food.
Well,
things that are exempt from taxation.
So you're not getting the poor aren't getting too many massages.
Right. But the point is the poor person, the lower income family does tend to spend more on things that are taxable at this sales tax level than the well-to-do family does. So it's argued that a sales tax is regressive. The lower income person has to pay a bigger share of their income in the tax.
There was a a fellow, multi-billionaire, actually gave a talk, a TED talk recently, and he talked about that. And he said, I made several billion dollars last year. You know, I bought two pairs of pants because how many pants do I need? You know,
that's right.
If I earned 1% of that amount, I probably still would have bought those two pair of pants.
That's correct.
So different income.
Good illustration of the regressivity point. Our income tax, by the way, is progressive. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite. So the rate goes up with income. And actually, when you dig into our individual income tax numbers, the who pays the income tax is really pretty surprising, I think, to some Arizonans. So approximately 45%. So 45 cents of every dollar that's paid into the state's coffers in the income tax comes from people earning $200,000 and more. Mm-hmm. That's about 3% of the taxpayers pay about 45% all taxes.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
Of
all income taxes.
Okay.
Okay, so we have an income tax that's progressive.
Yes.
We have a sales tax that's regressive.
Yes.
Add that all together, and how would you characterize our overall tax system?
Fairly proportional, I think, when you add it all together.
And by proportional, you mean that the rich and the poor are roughly paying the same percentage.
In terms of percent, although, you could argue the point. I think, actually, the sales tax is really kind of interesting. The big ticket items really drive a lot of sales tax dollars, and the well-to-do buy big ticket items.
Let's talk historical trends when we come back. More with economist Dennis Hoffman right here on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Dennis Hoffman. I wanted to just spend a minute or two just sort of wrapping a bow around this issue of regressivity. And you've said that you think our tax system, when you add it all together, and that's sales tax and income tax. And by the way, sometimes people get incensed and say, well, you know, the bottom half doesn't pay any income taxes. Well, that's one little piece of the entire picture. The only fair way to look at it is taxes overall, who pays taxes. And what you're saying in rough terms is you add together a regressive sales tax and a progressive income tax, everybody pays ballpark the same proportion of their income in state taxes.
I think as a rough rule of thumb, and some, you know, that's not going to apply to all families, and so there'd be some quibbles, but I think it's a fair statement.
Okay.
So then why dance around it? Why not just make a flat tax then? Why not just keep it the way it is? If you're saying that everybody's paying essentially the same amount anyway, as a proportion to their income, why not just stop this portion, and this is coming from here and there, and just make it a flat tax straight across the board?
Well, a flat tax typically refers to the individual income tax, and the dicey part of that would be, frankly, the politically popular tax, if there is a popular tax, the least hated.
There you go.
The yeah. least hated tax yeah. in the state, frankly, is the sales tax. And, some people have argued, well, that's because we stick it to the low-income people when we impose a sales tax, but I think that it all depends on where the expenditures are.
You know, I can answer that one, too, because we polled on that subject. You are absolutely right. The most popular tax is the sales tax, even though it's regressive. And it is the most popular even amongst the lowest income people. And I'll tell you why. It's because people, falsely, but they think of that as pennies. They say, I spend a dollar on this store, I pay it. It's, quote, it's only a nickel. Whereas when you pay income taxes, it's in one fell swoop, it's based on your total income of the year, and you think of that as being a lot of money because you're writing out one big check. And even though, as you've pointed out before, the sales tax takes in more money over the course of a year, it's a nickel and a dime at a time, and people think it's not that much.
Got the 1%. That's how you get the 1%. They called it a penny. Remember, they called it a penny.
Absolutely.
That's how we got that tax.
It's
just a penny.
If you want to raise revenue in this state and you have to go to the people to vote on it, you always do it as a sales tax, not because anybody will tell you it's the most rational tax. It is, however, the most saleable tax. because people, it's, as you said, the phrasing that will be used is it's only a penny. Now, I think apropos your point here about flat tax, I think Dennett, what I heard is, you know, we overall are flat, we're proportional, but we're only flat because the income tax is progressive, which compensates for the sales tax, which is regressive. If you replace the income tax with a flat tax, we would have one that's even and one that's regressive, and that would add together to mildly regressive.
Absolutely. That would be true.
So, all right. So let's move on from this. Talk about historically. And again, we're talking state of Arizona, not the local, not the federal.
Right.
What are our trends? Are we taxed more? I think most people would probably say, we're being taxed more.
Less. Considerably less. Here's a couple of statistics for you. So I've been here 36 years. In the early 80s, out of every income, approximately 60 to 65% of it was spent on items that were captured by the sales tax base. Today, that number is about 40%. So people are able to avoid sales taxes simply, and very legally, by the way, simply because they spend greater shares of their income on services today.
Well, also, we have the internet, right? I mean,
and there's that internet issue that we've already discussed.
I mean, it's always been free, but in the 1980s, we weren't too much buying too much stuff on the internet.
And compared to the early 90s, the individual income tax rates in this state are down between 30 and 35%. So out of a given dollar of income in the early 90s, you are paying, 30 to 35% less. And that applies at all income levels, the well-to-do, the middle, the lower income level. Mm-hmm. I think if you ask the average Arizonan what's happened to their taxes, they feel like they've gone up. But frankly, they have not.
I think that's most people that were born and raised here, been here more than 20 years. I think that's it. Those of us that moved from Southern California, we think, holy cow, are we getting away with it here?
Absolutely.
And it's awesome. But that's there's an argument for that. There's a make it up in volume argument as people see a lower tax rate and move to the state of Arizona. Am I wrong?
Well, it depends. Are you winning or losing on each individual? So if an individual moves here because of our low taxes and brings with them a family of four and they all show up in the K-12s, they don't pay for themselves.
Well, same argument is made about jobs. Not all jobs are net positive. If those are low-income, low-paying jobs, we're bringing in revenue into the state, but we're also imposing costs, which may be greater than the revenue.
Well, that's right. And that is the logic behind taxation of businesses, by the way. If businesses are making profits, paying low incomes, then, it's a rationale to tax those businesses. I think the flip side of that is if you have well-to-do businesses that are paying big salaries, huge benefits, I think there's an argument to be made to be fairly kind to the business itself because it's providing.
So you would
it's providing the opportunity for. Well, it's not just me that distinguishes this way. I think that tax law is written so it's really actually quite kind to big mobile businesses that do pay these big benefits. And I think there's a good rationale for that.
How do you feel about the, what the opponents would call the giveaways, where the enticement money, we want Apple to come here. But let's say we're not talking about a backroom phone up. We're talking about somebody that's paying, an Apple or somebody that's paying very high wages. What do you feel
in
about?
In the perfect world, Mike, you probably wouldn't want those things anywhere, right? You wouldn't want these incentive enticements to be distorting decision-making. The challenge that you face is that it's become a game.
California's doing it, Texas is doing it, and if we want to play.
And look at those two examples. Mm-hmm. Those two states are, that's, way right, way left.
Both of them are way left, way right, but they're both doing the corporate giveaways.
The fascinating thing is, You know, people say businesses move to Texas because Texas has low taxes. Well,
they also moved to California.
frankly, they also moved to California. And Texas has one of the biggest incentive programs of any state in the nation. Mm-hmm. And they also have a business franchise tax. They don't exactly have low taxes.
What is a business franchise tax?
So it's a special tax on businesses. It's in lieu of, say, a corporate income tax. You don't label it.
Is that gross receipts? Gross revenue?
It's based upon the revenue of the businesses.
Because that, to me, is very, very different. If you're taxing gross revenues, and if somebody, you could have a large business that's marginally profitable, that can really sting. As opposed to taxing corporate income, which you're only hitting profitable companies.
That's correct. So,
these are the people we elect. I mean, this is when we say elections have consequences, but it's so easy to vilify the big evil corporation that pays low wages and takes all these profits. Look, they were welcomed here with open arms by people that we went to the poll and voted for.
Well, look, you know, this issue around corporate America, you know, it's a puzzle to me. Corporate America hires a ton of people, you know. A lot of folks want to point to small businesses. They do all the hiring. A lot of small businesses wouldn't exist without big corporations hiring tons of people and bringing a lot of revenue into regions.
And those figures that cite small business as the generator, you got to look to the definition. Some of those definitions of small look pretty big to me.
Yes, well, look big to a lot of really small businesses. Yeah. Truly small businesses.
Small defined as under 500 employees, things like that.
Dennis Hoffman,
Let's keep him here. I got some more questions. Let's keep him here for another 10 minutes if we can.
Okay, I guess we're keeping him for another 10 minutes. Dennis Hoffman right here in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, I had more questions, so we strapped Dennis to the chair here and wouldn't let him out. Dennis, you tell me that the state has a little bit of a windfall this spring?
April was great. Mm-hmm. Actually, the revenue switch, in my opinion, and I watch this closely, it shows you the kind of life I have. I get up every morning with a cup of coffee and look at the latest daily revenue flows. But the switch kind of went on in December. And it got a little better in January and continued into February and March. And then we had a blockbuster April.
So, again, we're talking about a general fund of $8 or $9 billion.
Yes.
How much money are we talking about?
Well, gross receipts in the April flows, and that's final payments from last year and the first quarter estimated payments from this year, just in the individual income tax, $600 million.
And we just cut the state universities by, what, $500 million?
Seems like it, but it was $100 million, but it seemed like
okay, now it's not $600 million above. Right. It's okay. Not $600 million above what we had. It was $600 million in revenues. So we
I thought it was $600 million more.
Above increase?
Let's back up, guys.
Yeah, please.
Back.
Please.
April is always a good month. Okay. And you asked me how much money came in April. I said $600 million. For perspective, it was $500 million last year. $500 million last year was disappointing.
Okay, so it's $100 million over the previous year.
Correct.
And news. To correct what I said, the university budget was cut by roughly $100 million this year.
That is correct.
It's $500 million over the last several years total.
That is also correct.
So just to put those numbers in. So do you think that's going to persist? Is this part of a just generalized recovery?
I think it is part of a generalized recovery. Now here's the puzzle. People will look at the data. And they'll say, well, look, employment's only grown about 2%. Average withholding, the average income has really only grown about 3%. Where's all this money coming from? And it really gets back to the fact that a huge proportion of our individual income taxes are paid by well-to-do families. So 3% of the filers pay about 45% of all of these dollars. A lot of these people have volatile incomes.
If you're very high income, a lot of that is, did you decide to sell stocks or not? Your income can go way up or way down depending on those decisions.
And due to some logical tendencies over the last several years, it resulted in a very low flow of revenues in the spring of 14. Mm-hmm. So the percentage increase that we're seeing into the spring of 15 is off a low base. And I've heard it described by some as anomalous. Oh, this spring flow in 15 is an anomaly. I actually think the big anomaly was last year. Mm-hmm. And so if you account for that last year, this spring's flow is really not all of that surprising. I think it's sustainable.
My take on the significance of that is this. If it's a bubble, if it's a one-time thing, you take the $100 million, you sock it away into a rainy day fund or something like that, you don't spend it. Correct. If it's the beginning of a long-term trend that is going to stay there, that says state revenues are up and you can look at spending some of that.
Right. Well, here's a rule of thumb that I think applies. And if you think about this, Mike, in Arizona, you can spend it on one-time things. And actually, if you follow that argument, in Arizona, any expenditure is really one-time. And by that, I mean most expenditures can be cut in a following year. I think the concern in the state, and I think the evidence bears this out, is about allocating extra money to a tax cut. Mm-hmm. Because once you allocate those dollars to a tax cut,
it's gone, and it's never coming back.
Tax cuts are permanent.
And the reason for that is that there is a provision that requires a two-thirds vote in the legislature to raise any tax, and that is never going to happen.
There's no such thing as a permanent expenditure in Arizona, at least by my view. I've been here 36 years.
But
all tax cuts are permanent.
So it is asymmetric in that regard.
It is.
So I want to ask you, I sent you an article that I ran across.
Yes.
10 states with the worst taxes for average American.
Yes.
We came out number 8 on
yes.
that one.
All right,
this
top
was,
10.
This was in terms of regressivity. It said that the effective tax rate on the lowest 20%, the poor or the marginally poor, is the fifth highest in the country.
Yes.
The effective tax rate on the top 1% is the 19th lowest. So somewhere in the middle, but on the low end.
Yes.
Is that a fair portrayal?
So this flies in the face of some arguments that I've made here a few minutes ago about the fact that we're kind of proportional overall.
Well, I think what it said, they're consistent in that you said we're proportional. This is comparing us to other states. It says we may be proportional, but other states are more progressive. We tend to be more regressive. I mean, proportional is more regressive.
Correct. I think that's correct. The beef that I have with studies like this is that they look at, say, two numbers. They look at our overall sales tax rate.
Yeah.
They don't do any deep dive into who is actually making the purchases against that rate. They also don't do a very close look at individual income tax rates against threshold levels. Mm-hmm. Now, this will make you guys' eyes really glaze over. But think of it this way. We don't hit our top rate in Arizona as a married filing joint couple until incomes reach $300,000. In many states, they hit their top rate with the $10,000 of income. And studies like that don't take thresholds into account. They just look at rates.
Okay. Look at one of the sources of potential income for the state. We exempt a whole lot of stuff from sales tax in particular.
Yes.
I wonder if you could tell us how you feel about that, and are there tweaks there that could be made?
Well, here's the challenge that the legislature's faced over the years. Our revenue is really highly volatile. We've seen it this spring with these April flows, unanticipated April flows. Last spring, unanticipated low flows, which so high this year, low last year.
The high seems good, but if you get low, then we get pinched.
Well, and that was actually what put the mechanism in place for all of the hassles that we had this year with the budget cycle is that low flow in 14. So we need, in my opinion, a more stable source of revenue. We need to align the expenditure plans of the state with a stable source of revenue. But that means that we should be taxing things that are more stable, like personal service expenditures. Mm-hmm. Hair care today is a bigger deal. Personal trainer.
And this kind of stuff has the advantage of being progressive. You're only taxing stuff that really is discretionary.
Well, to some degree, pretty much we all need to get a haircut. The question is how much do we spend on that? And if we have a fixed proportion of that that goes to taxation, we can deal with that. What about veterinary services? automotive repair services. A lot of our services.
That's right. We pay tax on the parts, but not the labor.
But not on the labor. Mm-hmm. So we could kind of smooth the burden. We might be able to broaden the tax base, tax more of these things.
And tax a lower rate.
And drop the rate.
Now you're talking. I was hoping you would get to that point. Yes.
Absolutely.
All right, good.
Absolutely. Now, stability is probably as important or even more important than actually raising the amount of revenue that's collected.
I'm with you there. And I like that. I like what you're saying when you're talking about stability, because I think a lot of us don't think about that. We don't think about the flows coming in as a very unstable thing, the highs and the lows. And we just get mad at the legislature for spending it improperly.
And then they have to, if it's going wildly up and down, they have to do sometimes crazy and painful stuff to accommodate.
Indeed they do.
That.
Indeed, they do.
And talk about these exemptions. Representative Farley made some statements. We have almost 200 exemptions from our sales taxes, including such things as 4-inch pipes. You build it 5, 6, or 7 inches or 3 inches, 4-inch pipes are exempt.
Okay. Complex tax law is so complex, guys.
It's awful.
I bet if you would dig into this, it's got something to do with businesses that pay really big taxes in other ways. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of our businesses that do pay very big taxes in other ways, but maybe have a need for a particular pipe at a particular size and hence have won an exemption because they're paying taxes in different ways.
My gut would say let's look at campaign contributions as well if we're looking for an explanation on something like that.
You guys are just screaming my language right now. I like how y'all came around. Here we go. Keep it up. What you got, Doc?
Dennis, we're getting near. Well, if you would fix one thing about the tax code, what would it be?
Stability. Absolutely a stability. Broader base, drop the rates. If you have the discretion to do so, you can drop the rates, broaden the base. If we have more stability in our taxes, we also might want to take a look at, states like Texas that do 2-year budgeting cycles. Mm-hmm. This finding yourself short at the end of each year is a challenge.
Manager, that would be tough. You'd give me a month's notice to make a big cut. That's different from letting me know a year in advance.
Well, and it's interesting in our state, the legislature wants to put that budget to bed in early March. April is always the most informative month, as it is this year.
Dennis Hoffman, ASU economist. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here, guys. With
you. Great information. Really appreciate that. Doc, appreciate you being here. Appreciate all your efforts in getting all this put together. You do a great job. Doc O'Neill, Mike Russell's Think Tank, KTAR News.